In this episode, I'm going to explain the lesson Hugh Hefner taught me when I was 9 years old, and I'm going to teach you how to battle for your customers' attention.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery. Brought to you by Wirebuzz.
What is up? What is up? All right. So can we talk about Hugh Hefner for a moment? Quick spoiler alert, if you still haven't heard, the 91-year-old founder of Playboy passed away this week. And it's hard to, it's hard to say he's actually going to a better place, right? Now, I see Hefner a little bit differently than most. Hefner grew wealthy by centralizing something people couldn't easily get access to. Think about that. It's pretty much the same blueprint as an earlier generation success business model. We'll get into that in a moment. But I see Hefner differently. I look at this centralized model that he created, and Hef basically centralized and controlled the market on photos of naked women, right? And his enterprise grew from print to television and eventually radio. And when you grow up in Los Angeles in the 1970s and 80s, your family is, well, at least my family was, just a little bit different than the rest of the country. Often, you know, I'm asked by clients or when I'm speaking by the audience, what's the secret to a powerful business video? And the answer is relevancy and emotion. Now, here's the marketing lesson that I think of when somebody brings up Hugh Hefner. You know, when you hear stories that old people tell about how hard their life was, like, when I was a kid, I used to walk 6 miles to school both ways, uphill, in the snow. Yeah. When you hear that kind of a story, well, it's very similar to what my childhood was like. And to prove a point, my grandparents had a membership at the Playboy Club on Sunset Boulevard. It was a hardship for me. My grandfather was Brooklyn street smart. And I was basically raised part-time in their home. And I got to spend the weekends at their house. And sometimes at night, my grandparents would want to go out for a drink or go to dinner or listen to live music. And my grandfather, super crafty dude, used to pay the doorman or the manager, the GM or the maitre d' at the Playboy Club to sneak me in. It was a nightclub or I don't know, something kind of sexy. Excuse me for a moment. Hey, Mr. DJ, drop that beat for me, the one that was rolling through my head when I was cruising through the Playboy Club. Ooh, that's right. Oh, yeah. Up on the top penthouse floor on Sunset Boulevard, this is exactly the music and what it sounded like as I'd strut the long walk to the bar TV to fake check, on the Lakers score. When I was really trying to soak up all that Playboy eye candy. Yeah, feeling it. For this kid, topless waitresses in bunny suits was pretty epic. Mm-hmm. And when I had to sit back down, that's right, back to reality next to my grandmother, things just kind of mellowed down. I came back to reality. And that music in my head changed. Yep, just like this. And come to think of it, it must have been somewhat of a respectable place because my grandmother was a respectable lady and going to the Playboy Club with my grandmother was still better than not going at all, right? Yeah. But I remember every bunny ear, cottontail, and of course every boobie because, well, for the same reason why business videos are so powerful, relevancy and emotion. You know, I had really bad ADHD as a kid, but you know what beats an attention disorder every single time for a young boy? Well, besides naked Playboy bunnies, relevancy and emotion. And the same is true for each and every person that is listening or that you're trying to market to. Those Playboy bunnies were super relevant to me. I had every emotion. No offense to anyone. But a night at the Playboy Club for a 9-year-old Todd Hartley grabbed my attention. It was super, super relevant. And the more relevant and emotionally persuasive you can make your business videos, the more powerful those results are going to be. And that's the first thing I think of when Hugh Hefner's name comes up. The second thing I know is who knocked the Playboy empire off. You did. You're to blame. All of the people who opposed Playboy didn't accurately even predict the role you would play. How could they? They misidentified Playboy's biggest weakness. Think about all the groups that fought to silence or censor Hef's free speech along the way. All their efforts failed because of you. And people just like you who funded Playboy, people wanted it. And Hef just centralized the demand and provided it to his audience. And then technology changed and you did it again. You stopped needing Hef's centralized platform. And instead, the internet created decentralized adult content. That same centralized product was provided by all the captains of the other industries that were dominant during those years across television networks, print, newspapers, movies, and music. And then technology gave users greater freedom. And you chose decentralized shows, decentralized news, music, and yes, decentralized porn. Don't ever forget how powerful you are, especially when you change how you do things. Actors used to have to be trained. But when actors saw reality stars generating huge audiences, it was a threat to their centralized control over who can entertain. So actors started belittling reality stars. You might remember that. Oh, they're not even really actors. They don't have any formal training. They're just a reality star, different talent level. You've heard that. You will decide eventually who wins. News was centralized. And then the internet gave you options and you stopped tuning in to centralized media. You know, when a breaking news story happens, I don't watch the national news. Like if there's a hurricane in Florida, I don't go to the national news and listen to somebody that really lives in New York City that goes down to Florida to cover the news. Instead, what I do when national news breaks or breaking news happens, I take the decentralized option, such as I go online, I Google, and I find what the local radio station is or who's posting videos locally. You do the same thing. And we've changed. And as such, the media has changed and the media has recognized the threat that citizen journalists provide, right? And reporters and editors created a low-class name for citizen journalists. They called them bloggers. And some of you might be too young to remember, but bloggers, well, they were like the wicked stepchild of the media, not to be taken seriously. But eventually you chose the same thing, decentralized news. And the old, weakened, centralized, established news media, which was already on life support, grabbed a last-ditch effort to help resuscitate their news services by claiming that decentralized competitors were fake, right? And the signs are everywhere. Hef's empire was destined to fail because it didn't adapt with the rest of us. Just another reminder of how the saying, the rich gets richer and the poor gets poorer, is totally wrong. Blockbuster was the rich. You changed your interests. And little Netflix came out of nowhere and kicked Blockbuster's ass. When I was a kid, my first job was at a photo lab. I worked at one of those 24-hour labs or one of those turning film around in 1 hour. And you know who the rock stars of the photo lab business was way, way back in the day? Kodak. They controlled everything, the film, the print paper, the chemicals, the processing machine, the picture frames that you would buy, the cameras, the disposable cameras, they were the rich. And like every captain of industry, they got fat, slow, they got lazy. Do you have any idea how many flashcards I own? It's just ridiculous. Wirebuzz has memory cards everywhere. I walk around the office and I'm thinking, there's a $75 card right there. There's another one, two more over there. I could easily walk past $500 to $1,000 in memory cards on my way to grab some beef jerky from the office kitchen, and not a single one of them has the name Kodak on it. memory cards are just the modern version of film. You get that, right? If the rich got richer, Kodak would have their name all over my office, when in fact, it can't be found anywhere. If the rich got richer, when technology is developing, the names Carnegie Mellon and Rothschild, they would be the company names that rule Silicon Valley today. But I was just working 2 days ago for a digital juggernaut in Mountain View. And if you're not sure who rules Mountain View, California, just Google it, right? But those rich names, Carnegie, Mellon, Rothschild, can't be found anywhere except on museums back east. Today's super rich, Buffett, Gates, the big Zuck. That's all new money. First generation. Zuck isn't even old enough to run for president right now. And the poor gets richer in America, and the rich stuff themselves till they become fat and lazy and too lazy to innovate and compete. Sucks to be them. I'm nipping on your heels, rich. And for those of you that are also innovating, you are too. Today's great wealth opportunities are all about decentralizing something that used to be centralized. Hef's demise is due to the same forces that bringing down Toys R Us right now. And as Gary Vee would say, innovate or die. That is your choice. Sorry about that, Hef. Hefner was a pioneer. He was a First Amendment rights champion and an innovator in his day, but innovators have to always be innovating. It was clearly obvious that the writing on the wall and the long-term demise of Playboy was happening right before their eyes. Even Penthouse, gone, right? The internet video phenomenon is so powerful that even the champions of images can't compete against the power of video. You know, I was seeing something go around the office the other day, and it really, I read an internal email that Marcus Krieg, our director of strategy, wrote to the team. And it was really good. It was such an important business lesson for all of us at our office that I wanted to make sure that you had an opportunity to hear it. Okay. Quote, I wanted to briefly remind everyone about handoff responsibilities and best practices to ensure projects proceed smoothly and we don't create unnecessary bottlenecks. Marcus goes on to say, but first, a brief metaphor, right? Whenever you're trying to explain something, if you can use a visual or a metaphor, you're going to get better results. And watch Marcus do this. Here's his metaphor. In faster relay races, like a 4x100, the person carrying the baton, the one in the back, is in total control. The recipient may hold out their hand, but it's the responsibility of the carrier, the one in the back, to ensure the handoff is secured before letting go or slowing down. There are two simple reasons for this. One, it's easier to look forward than to look behind you. And two, you lose if the baton hits the ground. The same is true here at Wirebuzz or any of your companies. I'm ad-libbing that part right there. Marcus goes on to say, it's the responsibility of Todd to hand off projects to the salesperson. It's the responsibility of the salesperson to hand off projects to the account directors, and so on down the line. It's always important to over-communicate. It's always important to make sure, and this is true when interacting with another agency or your partners or a client, over-communicate. Nobody really ever gets slapped down for over-communicating to make sure that the process is going on. Where people make mistakes, where marketing train wrecks happen, is when the handoff of the baton does not go smoothly, and the baton hits the ground, and everybody loses. Good on you, Marcus. You know, my dad had a number one rule. Number one rule in my dad's house, and it probably really existed for when we were outside of the house, was don't embarrass the family. Not here, not now, not ever. And before we would go out to dinner in the car, my dad would say, do not violate the number one rule. We all knew what that meant. And the reason you want to over-communicate is so you don't embarrass the family, drop the baton, and lose, right? Always over-communicate. Or my dad's going to drag your ass out of the restaurant and throw you in the car, and it's not going to be pretty, because that's how it went down. Success often comes down to time and priorities. It's the truth. When you're doing video projects, anybody could do your video project faster, right? This isn't Usain Bolt. You're not trying to rush to get it done. Success is time and priorities. If you manage your time well, you manage that shoot well and set the right priorities while you're on the set for shoot day, you can accomplish just about anything. It's just that easy. In fact, it's already in black and white. Many of us grew up with it. If you don't believe me, just read The Tortoise and the Hare. Aren't familiar with that classic? I'll translate my analogy for all y'all millennials out there. The Tortoise and the Hare was your great-great-grandfather's Harry Potter versus Lucius Malfoy. Aight? So always ask yourself, what are your priorities and how much time are you dedicating to them? If you're on a shoot set, if you're on a shoot set and you're trying to run and gun everything, then your priorities are large amounts of content and maybe not quality or story, right? Or compelling or emotions or relevancy. But if your priority is relevancy and emotion, you can do some great stuff if you prioritize them on that shoot day. Make sure you're using that time wisely. It'll be seen in the finished product. So while we're talking about prioritization, I want to spend a moment and talk with you about market signals. Regardless if you're working for yourself or someone else, you need to be sensitive to market signals. One of the reasons I started Wirebuzz in 2010 was I was already sensitive to the market signals that businesses were craving a way to communicate to their target audience, right? That they needed to hack the attention in order to bring people through the buyer's journey. You know, instincts and research has discovered that people don't read anymore. So a market signal for me as a digital marketer was start specializing and obsessing in video, because the less attention span that people have, the more valuable it is to pull them through a highly relevant buyer's journey or through highly relevant emotion-based content. You know, people buy, people make buying decisions because of emotions. If you don't believe it, think about when you and your spouse walked through the property you ended up buying as your home, or the time you went and looked at puppies and you had a budget. But once you met that puppy, screw the budget. We found the puppy, right? People make buying decisions emotionally and then they post-rationalize it later with logic. When my wife and I walked through a home and halfway through it, my wife was already crying. It was an emotional decision. She knew we were going to live there, right? Foregone conclusion. Market signals are the same way. Someone who listens to this podcast and is very well connected presented me with a market signal recently. And I'm willing to bet that they didn't even realize it, but I floated an idea and I saw their reaction. Their reaction was an indicator of high interest or demand. And because I've been running around Silicon Valley for 2 days this week, like a crazy entrepreneur that's up there servicing a ton of clients from one biotech juggernaut to the next, I didn't see the market signal until it surfaced 48 hours later. But now that I know their demand, I've got another piece of my business about to be pitched and they're going to bite on it. And how cool is that? Your action item for this week is to be sensitive, really sensitive to the market signals your clients and prospects present to you. And act on those market signals based on their color. So let's talk about their color. A few years ago, I was leading digital marketing strategies for a bunch of celebrities, and almost all of them were billionaires. And while on a cross-country flight on one of their jets, which is how I roll, I asked, and quite honestly, I'm a Southwest guy, but it's funny for me to be like, I only fly private. Because that after you have that first jet experience, you're like, I'm so not going back to Southwest. Like, this is me. This is where I belong. And but I fly first class on Southwest. And while on a cross-country flight, I said to him, I was like, hey, how does a billionaire see opportunity differently than a millionaire or even a thousandaire? And he said, hey, you know what, Todd, we read market signals like streetlights, man. Green means go and go fast, right? That's an investment. Yellow means proceed ahead, but with caution, like start pulling your risk off the table because it probably is going to turn red at some point. And red means stop and don't go any further unless, of course, your market signals change. The signal I recently got was a big, bright green. What signals have you been getting? Think about it. It won't come immediately. So be on the lookout this week and be ready to adjust to a market signal that's coming to a business and an opportunity near you. Now, we've spent some time on this podcast talking about how to win the battle for consumer attention, right? You know it's important. The road is actually headed there. That's where we're leading. People don't go to video because they're like, oh, we want to see ourselves in a video. They go to video because they already know it wins the battle for their customers' attention, right? It creates better results, higher ROI. Well, a business professor at Harvard Business School, who's also a brand consultant, whose research focuses on the marketing principles of the attention economy, says advertisers are fighting blind when it comes to vying for customer attention. Now, this is a Think with Google article. Google pushed it out last week and coming up on a podcast very soon, right here at Video Marketing Mastery. This Harvard Business School professor is going to be checking in and we're going to share his findings so you can better hack the attention span of your customers. Imagine he says that you're blindfolded and unwilling to throw money into a pit as you fight battles beyond your means. It may sound far-fetched, but that's exactly what happens with brands and their advertising spend right now. I know this firsthand, he says. I research, I teach, and practice the marketing principles of buying, selling, capturing, and using customer attention efficiently. When I don't have my professor hat on, I work to help brands navigate this battlefield. Based on my research and experience, I've come to a sobering conclusion. The advertising industry is broke. And as the volume of video content has exploded in the past few years, consumer behavior changed drastically, and the advertising industry failed to adapt. Today, attention paid to ads is not equal across all screens and mediums, but advertisers aren't accounting for them properly. So we're going to talk about why the attention economy raises the stakes for brands. We're going to talk about how you use video, the most powerful persuasive tool for convincing and converting, and use the art of relevancy and emotion to pull your specific target customer through the buyer's journey so they convert at faster levels. Now, this Harvard business professor goes on to say, when you take demand that greatly outweighs supply and throw in rapid transformation of consumer behavior, you have a recipe for waste. And most marketers out there, if you sit them down and you pump them full of two cocktails, will admit that the strategies that they know and trust are no longer trustworthy. And so we're going to be talking about how you fight for attention and do it at really freakish rates. You're not going to want to miss that episode coming up. And if you want to prepare for it, oh, this is going to be good. When I was a talk show host, I always posted who my next guest was going to be on my website. And I made sure that I made available what they were going to talk about. I had them submit into writing on the site what they were going to talk about on the podcast so the audience could come armed to ask them a smart question, or if their information wasn't well thought out, the audience could actually come to the show ready to destroy the guest, to challenge them, right? So what I'd like you to do, and by the way, I've read this guy's full article on Think with Google. You are going to love it. I'm going to put it on the show notes page for this episode, wirebuzz.com/123. Read it. If you've got a question that you want asked that's relevant to this article, submitted in to me. You can do that on Twitter, on LinkedIn, on Facebook, Instagram, or wirebuzz.com/pitch with a P. You got it? wirebuzz.com/pitch. And if you're trying to figure out how to guarantee your videos generate ROI, which quite frankly, that's all that friggin' matters. We created a 5-part video-based mini course featuring yours truly teaching the Wirebuzz secrets to generating ROI with your videos. And it's free to the listeners of this podcast. You can get access to it at wirebuzz.com/ROI. And each and every day for 5 days, I'll be sent directly to your inbox and I will entertain you and educate you on the real principles of tying your video ad spend back to a business ROI, which allows you to grow, to prove out your success, and to keep your job. How's that sound? All right. If this podcast was valuable to you, do us a solid. Go to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. Hit the subscribe button, and each and every new episode 2 a week will be sent directly to your mobile device so you can listen to us on the go, which brings me to the question, why does the video guy have a podcast? Well, very quickly, because my goals aren't to use video. My goals are to educate, and there's a blind spot in video. I can't educate you when you're driving or while you're at the gym or while you're on an airplane flying cross country in first class rolling VIP style on Southwest with me. Instead, we created a podcast to get into your ears, to educate you, to develop a relationship, and to introduce you to the real power of video as a business tool for lead generation, sales, and conversion. And it's a big topic. We're basically riding on the front of a tiger, bringing you along on the journey. Rate and review. If there's anybody that you're rooting for, send them this podcast so they understand where we're going. This road is really starting to develop. Marcus Krieg and I are writing a book right now. We're doing some amazing research with leading institutions around the U.S. I'm teasing that right now for the first time, and you're going to discover as a listener to this podcast and as a follower of ours from our email newsletter, somebody that's subscribing to that email newsletter that gets sent out, maybe if you follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, as our British friend Ruby likes to say, then we're going to make sure that each and every episode and piece of information gets sent directly to you. You're not going to want to miss where we're going. The research meetings alone that I had yesterday are enough to transform businesses into machines that convert at freakish rates. That's where we're headed. Come on with us. Climb on the back of that tiger because we're on for a hell of a ride. The next episode, 124, is going to feature the latest news that matters to video marketing masters like you. And we're going to break down what the business takeaways are, how you can use that information to grow your business, and you are not going to want to miss that. All right, so thanks for joining me for this episode. If you want to get access to any of the information, go to the show notes page for this episode, wirebuzz.com/123. And I will do my job bringing you the latest information so you can be, that's right, a video marketing master. Peace.